Happy Memorial Day.
Hey, everyone. Yes, Memorial Day weekend.
This is Ghostly Talk. I am Scott L.
And I'm Doug.
And this is the Ethereal Talk Show with the most content on the afterlife, the paranormal, ghosts, apparitions, you name it. We talk about it here.
Yes, we do. We definitely try anyway.
Hey, speaking of the afterlife and near-death experiences,
Ghostly Talk.
What are we talking about this week?
Well, we thought we'd talk about the afterlife and near-death experiences.
Yeah, I know we've touched on this numerous times in past shows already, but we never really sat down and really said, hey, let's talk about near-death experiences, the different types of theories related to near-death experiences, and the afterlife. And, the original topic for the show today was going to be, we were going to go to a psychic fair yesterday.
Yeah, that was a trip and a half.
Yeah, we were planning on going to a psychic fair yesterday and spend a day at a psychic fair, me, Doug, and Doug's mom, to just hang out and get a reading and try to possibly tape it on my digital recorder and present it for you guys today and tell you what's going to happen to me or Doug, you know?
Guess how that went.
Yeah, well, that went superb. Let's start off. We decided to get lunch, so we went and got lunch.
Well, that went well.
That went great.
Yeah, that was fantastic.
Coffee was good. Everything was good.
Oh, yeah.
So that was the good part about the trip. We ended up getting to the particular psychic fair, and, of course, I forgot to get money, so I had to run next door and get money. I come back. They were inside. Doug and his mom were already inside. I'm like, okay, I'm going to go grab some money. You guys go ahead. I'll meet you guys in there. So I come back with a lot of money in my pocket, you know, and I come, and all of a sudden I see Doug's mom sitting in the van, and I see Doug walking out. And I'm like, what's going on?
Something's going on. Well, meanwhile, while Scott, you know, Scott ran off to get his money, my mother and I went to, psychic fairs are done, well, at least this version of them, is done in a room that you rent, not a hotel room, but you get like a ballroom kind of thing, or meeting room, I should say,
yeah,
in a hotel. And so we go to this hotel, and we look, and there's a sign that says, you know, psychic fair this way. So my mother and I went over there. we stepped in the door. It says admission $5. And I was expecting that. I had my money in my hand. Mm-hmm. And so we step in, but the lady who was taking admission money or whatever was kind of busy or something.
Yes,
so my mother walked over to the table of pamphlets. There's a table of pamphlets.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this humongous sign, like the size of a big screen TV, that says, readings, $35. So my mom stops me. She says, Doug, look at that sign. I said, well, I'm not going to pay no $5 and then pay $35 for a reading. I don't know. I mean, readings are important, I imagine, and they're pretty cool, and I'd like to get one done eventually, but I don't know. Are they worth $35?
$35. That raises an important question. It raised an important question to both me and Doug yesterday, and I'm sure we're probably going to ruffle a couple of feathers by saying this, because I know there are people out there in the paranormal field or fields that, well, ever since I've gotten into this thing, I know we've mentioned this before, too, I thought when I was getting into like paranormal research and studying ghosts and just everything related to them, I just thought it would be more of a hobby, more of a laid back thing. You know, there really wasn't, it wasn't something I was expecting to make any money off of.
Right.
And in the past 7 months, I have seen more people who are, I've never seen such money hungry people. Some of the people I've seen and met.
I agree.
And I thought, we've always treated this as a hobby. We talk about this every single week. We're like, hey, this is fun for us.
Yeah, this is our hobby.
You know, and
we paid for the equipment for Ghostly Talk. We paid for the bandwidth. We, you know, we're paying for this. This is something that's coming out of our pocket.
I mean, if we ever made money doing this, it wouldn't be really our doing.
Yeah, it would be somebody else trying to do it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, really, we're not pushing this show to, we're always trying to improve and make it a better show and a more interesting show and a more educational show, but I mean, it just blows me away that yesterday I was just blown away by that. I'm like, $35, I was telling you yesterday that I was in Florida and I was getting them done for $5 a piece by ladies on the street in downtown Tampa, man. And I come here and we go.
Are you sure those were readings?
Yeah, they were readings. Okay. They were readings.
There's other things I heard you can get for $5, $10 on the street.
No comment.
Okay.
So anyway,
greetings.
So, I mean, yeah, we firmly, well, me, Doug, and his mom all agree that that $35 is a lot of money.
Yeah, if that's the going rate for them, then that's fine.
Yeah,
I guess
I understand inflation.
I'll get used to it.
I understand inflation.
I'll save up.
But, you know, $35.
I'm in the wrong line of work. Yeah.
Geez, you know.
$35.
So, I mean, we're not, I'm sure we're going to ruffle a couple of feathers by saying what we're saying right now, but we turned around and walked away. I mean,
yeah.
I said, I agree with Doug when he said, hey, we're not going to go in there, and he explained it to me, and I'm like, you know what? Either am I. I'm not going to blow $35 on something like that. It's just, it don't make any sense for me to do something like that. But regardless, we had a good time.
Well, it was fun. I mean, we went to that, and then we didn't go. So yeah. So we went, but we didn't.
We ended up going to a psychic shop, though.
Yeah, we went to a local psychic
just
proprietor store.
Yeah, sure.
And we found it and went in. It was amazingly busy. I think, like, the entire psychic's family was there or something,
yeah.
And they just keep running in and out of the store,
yeah,
doing things. And
but they were very nice. They were very cool. I managed to pick up some cedarwood incense. Very nice stuff. I burnt like 3 sticks already.
Yeah, I got some. I burnt one of my old sticks, though.
That stuff's good. But, yeah, I mean, we were pretty bummed out by that because we were all looking forward to going to that.
Well, she gives, there at the store, the proprietor lady gives psychic greetings,
yeah,
and the price is
$35. So we,
yeah,
were kind of like, well, maybe that is the going rate.
Yeah, it might be, but I would expect
that. I don't
think
any of us were really in the mood to spend that kind of money.
I expected that a store psychic lady, though, one that, you know, runs a shop and everything, that she would be able to command those kinds of prices.
I'd rather give it to her, honestly.
Yeah.
I would. I'd rather give it to her. I'd rather give it to her because she was a very nice lady, too.
Yeah, well, part of our problem is we don't know any.
Yeah,
I'm like, who's the best? Who should we go to? We just
don't
know.
I don't think
there's
Consumer Reports for this, honestly.
Yeah.
So
we don't know offhand what ones are good, what ones, you know, I'm sure they're all, like, able, but,
oh, yeah,
you know, what ones can click with you.
I'm not questioning anybody's abilities by that. I'm just saying, look, man.
Well, I remember going to a psychic show kind of thing, and it was at a hotel kind of thing. It was in a humongous room, though, not just a meeting room. This meeting room was tiny. It was the size of, like, a bathroom or something. I mean,
I didn't
like
get to see
tiny.
It.
Oh, well, if you
no,
blinked,
that's
you would have
right.
missed it.
Yeah, okay.
There were, like, maybe 6 or 7 psychics there and a couple tables of trinkets that you could purchase. And then, you know, the lady taking the money and then the thing with all the pamphlets on it. And the sign bearing the bad news of how much a reading is. So I'm like, okay, it's really small. And what I expected was basically a ballroom kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And what I got was a little tiny meeting room kind of thing.
Well, like I said, I mean, I'm sure somebody's not going to agree with us on this. Most likely a person who's charging for their services. But we just think $35 is a little excessive. So,
well, I would pay. Well, when I went mm-hmm. to this huge one,
yeah,
I remember it was. Well, they called them mini readings. They didn't call them full readings. So,
yeah.
So obviously, this $35 thing was probably for a full reading, which I would assume is what, a half hour or an hour or something. I don't know. But so this was probably for a full reading. It's probably a good deal. It's just I was you know, hoping for the probably $15-$20 mini readings.
Yeah.
I don't even know if I'd pay. $25 for a mini reading. I would expect, like, the lady in her shop, I would expect her to be $35.
I would have paid that.
I would have paid that.
We were kind of burned out on that whole thing by the time we got to that shop.
Yeah.
That never happened.
And then if you invite somebody to a psychic party kind of thing, I would expect it to be about $35, maybe even $40, you know, for, like, a tip kind of thing, you know. But, you know, that's where, like, a psychic would come to your house and do, you know, 7 or 8 of your closest friends.
That's a more intimate setting, though.
Yeah, and you get to spend more time, and I think that when they, like, you know, can address you as a group and then address you individually as
mm-hmm.
well. So I think that, you know, that kind of, you know, system or service would command that, you know, that amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
But just to go to a psychic fair where you're sitting at a table for 15 minutes or so and saying, you know, am I going to meet anyone? Do I have any health problems? Is my work going to get better? I just don't know if $35
justifies that.
Yeah, it's not an intimate situation.
Yeah, I mean, that's what was very cool about what, you know, when I was in Florida, is that it was very intimate. I mean, even if they were on the street, but they had a booth, and you just, like,
yeah,
went in there. And
yeah.
Me and my friend who
was... Well, when was that?
That was, like, last year.
Oh, that's cool.
It was, like, February of last year. I was down in Florida, and I was just me and my friend cruising around the street, and she's like, hey, check it out. And I'm like, hey, all right.
Cool.
You know, and I mean, it was, but it was very intimate, and the lady was very, she, to be honest with you, the lady who I really sat down with, she told me some stuff that I just started crying. I mean, I really busted out and started bawling.
Dang.
There was just some things she told me, and maybe I'm just a sucker like anybody, you know, whatever, but she told me some things that really just, you know, fried me, very emotional things that I was just like, well, that's pretty deep, but.
That's
okay, so
cool.
That's our first official rant for the Ghostly Talk program.
Yeah, our rant is that we went to a psychic fair, but then we'd end up not going.
Yeah, I mean, we don't really want to upset anybody, but we just
didn't tell anyone about Marianne either. So after we went to the psychic store, my mom goes, I remember seeing a psychic, a sign, you know, there's a psychic here at this, like, what? Junk fair kind of thing. What do they call those?
Flea market.
Flea market, yes. So we go to this flea market, and sure enough, there's a sign, Marianne the Psychic is here. So we went in, and we looked around. Of course, the flea market was phenomenal. I love all
don't
kinds
even get,
of...
We'll talk this whole show about
I know,
market.
All kinds of cool junk. But anyway, then my mom ended up asking around and finding out that Marianne had left six months previous.
She had the day off.
Yeah. No, I thought she had
already left?
Closed up her booth 6 months ago.
Why don't they take the sign down?
I know, they should have. But no, she had left like 6 months ago. She left the flea market. So.
Apparently business wasn't very good at the flea market.
So. Evidently not.
So we didn't get to see it. We didn't get to talk to any psychics yesterday. We were going to do our whole show on that.
Yeah, so we were at a loss for a topic.
So we get back to my house yesterday, and we're like, okay, what are we going to talk about? So we clunked heads for about 15 minutes.
Oh, my gosh.
And we realized that we haven't really discussed, like, a high-level view of near-death experiences in the afterlife. And can you hear the ice cream truck coming by?
I can hear the ice cream truck coming by.
Can you guys hear the ice cream? Hopefully you can hear the ice cream truck.
I wonder if they take PayPal. Excuse me, ice
I'm
cream
hang
truck.
My credit card out the window. Sorry about that. We got the windows open. It's just too nice of a day.
Oh, it's a gorgeous day here near Detroit, Michigan.
Yeah. Beautiful. So, anyways, though, we're going to talk about near-death experiences and the afterlife.
Yeah, the afterlife, near-death experiences, different kinds of things that, you know...
Yeah, I mean,
what
you may ask,
what,
first
what
thing you're going to ask probably is, what is near-death and the afterlife? Well, I mean, they work interdependently. What we studied and what we learned over the last day and a half, trying to get ready for the show, and basically, I mean, the only thing we really have to explain the afterlife right now, any type of evidence, is that people have had near-death experiences, and they come back and go, okay, this is what happened. So that's what we're going to talk about. I mean, we're going to talk about the theories, basically. So,
well, some of them, the ones we're familiar with.
Yeah.
Because we didn't get too much study time.
Yeah, we tried to get as much as we could in. But the first thing we should touch on, though, is that there's the most obvious one, which is shared by lots of atheists and Buddhists, is that when you die, you die. Basically, speaking I was an atheist for a long time, actually, and the one thing that, I mean, atheism is a very simple belief. It's a very simple belief system. If you could just sum it up in a few sentences, basically, it's I believe in science. I believe everything on this planet can be explained in scientific terms, and that we are nothing more than organisms. Where in saying that. I mean, just under the same impression that, you know, the fly that you swatted out with your fly swatter, well, it's a dead fly. No, you know, you could say just we're no different than a fly, basically, that we're all the same, and when we die, we die.
Well, I don't like being, you know...
equated to a fly?
Yeah, that's kind of ick, but no, I think that's obviously a very popular belief, is that after this there is nothing.
That's actually a growing belief, too. A lot of people are really starting to believe that way.
Well, we're, you know, I mean, scientifically we're a biochemical organism.
Yeah.
A lot of, you know, chemicals and biology and, you know, living cells and things. And we even have dead cells we carry around on us, like our hair and stuff. And we're just, you know, just that.
Yeah.
That is it.
Very simple. When you die, you die.
Yeah, just by the factor of being what we are, we can think and talk and interact with each other. And then when it all shuts down, that's our off switch.
Yeah, basically. And I mean, like I said, I was an atheist for a long time, and to be quite honest with you, after studying this stuff for a few months, I'm going, okay, look. You know, I thought I had myself set. I thought I understood what was going on around me. And there was a great deal of confusion there for a little while with me because I was like, okay, I'm seeing all this weird stuff. I'm reading all this weird stuff. And it's very convincing to me that there is more going on because it's very hard for me, just personally, to believe now that when you die, you die. It's very hard for me to fathom that when you die, everything just goes black.
Well, I don't think it's very hard to fathom that. I think it's probably too easy to fathom that.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. when, you know, because you just say, okay, well, you know, after this is it. After the last hurrah, then that's it, you know, and mm-hmm. and that's like really easy to fathom, and then you can of course easily disassociate yourself from other thoughts, you know, other high thoughts such as you know religion,
yeah. Heaven, hell.
Yeah, you don't even have to think about that because it obviously would no longer apply. So it actually simplifies your life quite a bit.
Yeah, it does.
The only thing is. Like you were saying about seeing other things, seeing things go on, I think you're right. I think that particular belief system does not explain a lot of the things that you see or hear about.
Well, the problem that I had, I mean, well, I was like, I believe I was a strict atheist. I don't want to say strict, but I'm saying I was you can't say you're a practicing atheist because you don't practice anything. So, but I was an atheist. Let's just say, I mean, that was good for almost a good decade. I was an atheist, and there was people like me who were atheists that basically said, okay, look, this is the way I believe, and I'm still open to listen to other people's viewpoints on what they think, and I'll leave it at that, but I'm still going to stick with what I believe in. And then you had the people that, this might be a kind of a crude word to use it, but I referred to them as Nazi atheists, because those were the people that would not listen to you. They were the people that said, you're wrong, don't talk to me. I don't want to hear your garbage.
Closed mind.
Very closed-minded people.
Yeah.
That's fine. If that's the way they want to believe, that's fine. I'm open to that also, if that's what they want. But, I mean, I'm talking about me as an atheist and that person as an atheist. I used to talk with people like that, and I'm like, well, just listen for a minute. Just give it a chance. I'm not saying you have to believe in it. I'm just saying, I mean, respect other people's viewpoints.
And you know? There are those who won't. And we'll talk a little bit more about them in a sec.
Okay.
It's paranormal and scientific. It's ghostly talk.
Yeah, the thing that I like to do is keep an open mind. And
always.
Yeah, keeping an open mind, unfortunately, sometimes it means listening to other people.
And sometimes it's difficult, too.
Yeah.
It's very difficult when you completely disagree with someone on a subject, and they're hammering you with what they think. It's hard to sit there and listen to that. I agree.
Well, and a lot of times they hammer over and over the same thing, same thing. And it's hard, not only hard to listen to because of the fact that you're, yeah, but it's just like, okay, this makes no sense, and they're just going on and on.
But that's
you
fine, because you know what? If you don't listen, you don't learn. Bottom line.
But you do have, yeah, I think you have to listen, and you've got to listen to all viewpoints.
It's good to be educated. I mean, if I can know everything about religion, for example, I'd love to, because if somebody wanted to argue with me on something, I go, okay, well, mm-hmm. What is this? What about this then?
Well, I'm often amazed when people start quoting, you know, the Bible or the Quran or all that. So they just start quoting it, you know, like it's ingrained in their brains. And a lot of folks, it actually is.
Yeah.
The only thing is it's interpretation, I think, as well. So a lot mm-hmm. of stuff has been vastly misinterpreted, mm-hmm. or what I really like about Bible studies and things like that is when they say, you know, that somebody will quote something and then somebody else knowing about the Bible will quote something from the exact same Bible that exactly opposes mm-hmm. the statement or interpretation
so that's
that
just
the first person
that's
does.
Just a matter of perception.
Yeah,
basically.
so you start getting into, I guess, Bible wars. Oh, that'd make a cool radio talk show.
Well, I mean, God, look at the state of the world today.
Yeah.
Look at the state of the world today. I mean, if you really want to just see Bible Wars in action.
Hey, new on the Learning Channel, Bible Wars. Oh, Junkyard Wars tomorrow. it's June 6th, I'm sorry.
Okay.
June 6th, Junkyard Wars, can't wait.
Oh, that's going to be cool. But,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, just look at the state of the world today. I mean, we're by no means sitting here saying that you know, we're not knocking anything. We're just saying this is how use an open mind.
Yeah.
Concerning.
What I think. Keep an open mind.
Keep an open mind.
So back to about, you know.
Yeah, are we going to talk about near death?
No, I think we'll just leave that go till next show. No, I think what happens is, what we were saying, somehow we got onto Bible, and that's like the topic that I always want to avoid.
Yeah, so we're going to leave
people
that
are
alone.
It's
a very sensitive
subject. Yeah.
And we don't want to, like I said, it's a matter of respect, and we do even, I mean, I respect the Bible and intensely.
Yeah,
but it's a wonderful book. I think it's a wonderful book. I just don't quote it every day.
Right.
You know what I mean?
There are those who can. I respect that. But I think that what happens is with what this stuff doesn't explain. What I think that this doesn't explain, the theory of there's nothing after we are gone.
Uh-huh.
Okay. What that doesn't explain is things that have been going on or reported for literally centuries and centuries of man's existence, and that would be, seeing ghosts and things like, you know, claiming to remember past lives and things like that. So what that theory does not explain is, you know, that those phenomena that people experience and report one way or the other, usually to their detriment, you know.
And I really can't take that into account, because when you say something, a closed-minded statement, such as, there's nothing after we die.
There's no such thing as ghosts. There's no such thing as heaven. There's no such thing as hell.
And
we're
not really saying there's anything such as ghosts. We're trying to prove that there is.
Yeah, it would be cool. But
it would be very cool, and we're taking an honest stab at it, and I mean, but we're not going to sit here and say there are ghosts. There are not ghosts. We're not going to make any statements, a closed-ended statement like that where it goes. I mean,
right.
There's no way to do it. We're trying to be as
open-minded
as possible.
Not till we prove it.
Yeah. But we're trying to be as open-minded as possible about the whole thing. But
so,
the afterlife, though.
I was getting on to reincarnation.
Yeah.
Because I think that that's one big, big topic we should talk about before reincarnation or before near-death experiences.
Yeah, that's huge.
Reincarnation is when you pass away. It's another theory. When you pass away, your soul or spirit comes back as someone else.
Yeah, that's probably the most widely believed.
Yeah, I've seen whole TV specials on it.
Yeah,
you know,
books on it.
But there's books, TV
everyone.
Specials. The things that I know most about, because I've studied at great depth, Edgar Cayce, and he said, that's another thing. Drawing on Edgar Cayce, a lot of people say, I believe it was the American Indians and stuff. They would say, well, when you die, your spirit comes back as an eagle or I don't know, a cockroach, whatever. Edgar Cayce said, no, that's not the same thing.
Yeah.
That's transmigration. That doesn't happen, according to Edgar Cayce, but according to the American Indians, I suppose it did.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all kinds of even factions, I guess,
of reincarnation.
Of reincarnation. Mm-hmm. So reincarnation. One of the things that you can get, or at least at the one psychic fair that I had gone to, but that was a long time ago, was a past life regression. And what they could do, evidently, is the psychic could look at you and tell somehow what you were in your past lives and tell you about several of them. You know, and I've read story upon story upon story about, you know, what people were in their past lives. And for some reason, in a lot of Edgar Cayce material, as a matter of fact, a lot of folks that he read for, he did what were called, life readings, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And these life oh, by the way, everything Edgar Cayce ever did was free.
Mm.
You write to him, he's now deceased, but you would write to him and, you know, basically plead your case, say, you know, so-and-so is ill, or I would like this, or I would like that. Could you do this? And if he got around to you, he did. If he didn't, he didn't. And the only thing is after a while, you would come to appreciate his service so much that you would, you know, send him a donation. So evidently that's not the current state of psychic business, but nonetheless,
apparently not.
No. So what happens is the Edgar Casey was in a lot of his material, which is all like meticulously recorded and cataloged and archived at the ARE, is that a lot of people evidently were on, incarnate, I guess, during the Atlantean times. You know, the big hit movie Atlantis. Yeah. Well, cartoon Atlantis, which by the way is awesome. go Disney. I don't expect a call from Disney Studios, but a lot of people like lived during that time, and that time was evidently some kind of very important time in the history of the Earth. Of course, now Atlantis is lost and a legend and a myth, but. Evidently a lot of people or a lot of souls were like around during that time, because a lot of folks, according to Casey Life Readings, were around during that time. And he described what they did and who they were and that kind of thing, which of course, unfortunately, all those records are gone, at the bottom of the sea or wherever. But what happens is, you can get these past life regressions in a couple of ways. Now, the ones at the psychic fair, the psychic would just look at you and tell you these things.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also a whole other way of getting past life regressions would be to go to a hypnotist. And the hypnotist makes you remember back further than when you were born. Fascinating stuff. That's the kind of stuff that I really, really, really get into. I would love that kind of thing.
Oh, I'd love to do that.
To remember back before I was born to who I was before, that kind of thing. And then maybe look up information on that person.
Mm-hmm.
See if they were like me or unlike me. Because one of the theories of reincarnation is that you keep becoming born again so that you can make your soul or spirit attain perfection.
Okay.
So that you grow and become, you know, the best soul or spirit or ultra body or whatever that you can be.
So what they're saying in the essence of it basically is that you keep playing the game over and over again until you get really good at it.
Yeah, until you get, well, not really good, well, but until you get it right,
until you master it.
Until you are an experienced
soul,
yeah, closer to God, soul or whatever, you know, until you're done, and you don't need to keep coming back to Earth, because you are now perfect, and that's nirvana in what Buddhism and Taoism.
I can just say I'm probably like on my first or second run right now, because I'm a complete moron.
Well, I think I'm probably middle aged.
just knowing who I am right now, I got a couple more runs to do before. If it holds true, that's what I'd, I need a little more work, I guess.
Yeah, that's what it is souls are, continually trying to improve, I guess, is like, that's above and beyond us being here right now. This is also, not only is this us, being here right now, but also it is our soul going through, learning, and becoming better and better at being a soul. So that's one of the theories.
It's a fascinating theory. I mean,
I want to go through a past life regression so bad it hurts. Get hypnotized, remember back. There's even stories out. I read one on the internet. I don't remember the names or dates or people involved, but evidently one fellow had done a study of children who remember before they were born.
That's amazing.
And that's a fascinating study. I should have looked it up, but we didn't have time. We just decided on this topic yesterday. Yeah. What do you want?
I know there has been a lot. I mean, that's a big question. I know, like I said a few minutes ago, reincarnation is probably the most widely believed or talked about at that systems. as far as the whole big picture goes. It's part of it, obviously, but that facet has always been, well, I guess it would be the most widely accepted, saying, yeah, well, it's the only thing we can, this is the only way I can explain it, man.
Well, the whole reason we even bring up reincarnation, though, is because reincarnation in and of itself, if just that is proven or shown to be, you know, a fact,
mm-hmm.
That could, you know, could explain what happens during the afterlife.
Absolutely.
That would just in
not
and of itself.
Not necessarily the mechanics of it, but the big picture. This
yeah,
is
the big picture is, yeah, after
you
die, your soul goes and waits
come
for
back out into another body.
Yeah, waits for another body, and there you are. You're back here again.
Which is just astounding.
Well, there was another fellow, because Edgar Cayce, obviously, I just told you all about that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not all about that. Speaking of which, you guys, good book, Edgar Cayce, The Sleeping Prophet by Jess Stern. It's my, like, Edgar Cayce Bible. Oops, that word again. It's my Edgar Cayce, like, reference, okay? I use that for everything, almost everything Edgar Cayce related, although I have many other Edgar Cayce books. That one is the one where I had read Edgar Cayce had said, you know, the fall of communism in Russia was going to happen. And, of course, when I read this, there was like, no way.
Yeah.
You know, I read this, America and Russia, you know, United States of America and Russia were the superpowers and everything like that, you know, and, you know, I never in a billion trillion years would have ever put down in black and white that I said that, you know, communism in Russia would fail, because it just didn't seem like they drilled it into our heads, you know, big enemy, communism, red, Russia, bad, you know, that was drilled into us by society.
I was very young during that time, but I do remember that.
Yeah.
Just that when you heard the word Russian,
oh, yeah.
It was very, very, no.
Yeah, bad, red, communist, yeah. Mm-hmm. Comrade, et cetera, and all these negative connotations. And I never in a billion years would have thought communism would have failed. Of course, you know, when you grow up or become enlightened or something, you realize communism is it doesn't mean the people are bad. It's another kind of governmental structure, et cetera, et cetera. And it's not, you know, the people aren't out to get you other than, I mean, you can have two democratic states just absolutely battling it out. Oh, heck, mm-hmm. Look, right here within our own United States of America, we had the Civil War,
mm-hmm.
The North and the South. Were we different people? No. Did we have different governmental structures? Well, of course, you know, the South had to, like, create its own, but it was democratic. It had a president.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was just, it's like, you know, they drill this all into your head without letting you understand it.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody was taught to think. Okay, I know we're not getting on the subject. Okay.
Sorry.
So, think. That's my number
one
word.
That's History Talk with your host, Doug.
Oh, shut up. We got to get another break in, and then,
right.
then we have to do my link of the day.
Yes, yes. Okay, well, we'll talk to you in a second.
West Michigan Ghost Hunters Society invites you to join us at the Felt Mansion. Visit us at www.geocities.com/WMGhost for details now.
Okay, so we've talked about how much we don't like psychic fairs today. We've talked about the fall of communism in Russia.
I think we should talk about, like, ghostly stuff and afterlife stuff. I know, I'm having a blast.
Oh,
I know we're not talking much about what we were going to talk about, but I know I'm having a blast.
Well, we're going to get into the meat of it here pretty
soon. I want free format shows from now on where I just get to talk. that's my new show topic.
All right.
Doug talks for an hour.
It works. Coming at you next week. There you go.
Okay. Link of the week.
This ties right into what we're talking about today, really.
Yeah, it was one that we found. Well, actually, Scott found it while surfing, and it is
www.near-death.com. Yeah.
Yeah. www.near-death.com. It's a whole bunch of stories about near-death experiences.
Near-death experiences. I mean, it ties a lot of other stuff into it also. We've used it for reference on other shows. I never really had a good chance. I usually just would pull it up on a Google search, you know, what I was looking for myself. But we never really got a chance to sit down and look at it. And once we got through it, we're like, wow, this is a really cool site. So
yeah,
Doug said, I'm going to make that my link of the week. So we're like, okay, cool. But
that's so people can,
very,
yeah,
very nice site.
Look it up.
Yeah, www.near-death.com. Lots of interesting material in there. Actually, some of the theories that we're going to be hitting here as far as the near-death experiences go is pulled directly off that site, so we are gonna reference them and thank them for having such a nice site for us to run our show on this week.
Well, the thing is you're sitting there, you know, researching the topics, and you're looking right at this site. It doesn't take much more. You know, if the computer had a club to reach out and hit you in the head and say, this is your link of the week, you know? I mean, you're sitting there staring at it. So we're like, okay, this is an awesome site. We gotta give them props.
Yeah, so it's a great site. Check it out, www.near-death.com. Moving on, though, let's get into some of the meat of this in this last half hour, though. We talked about reincarnation, and we talked about nothing.
We talked about nothing for a long time.
But yeah, we talked about the an atheistic view on it. This when we die, we die. Now, what's going to tie right into that, and what's going to give us? I mean, the only evidence we have of like that there may be an afterlife or something happens after you die is the near death experience.
Well, that's another one, because reincarnation. You know, people remembering before their birth and people,
well, yeah,
you know, the reincarnation theories also, mm-hmm, you know, if you get a past life regression, that kind of thing,
mm-hmm,
that also is, you know, some more
logs on the fire. This is the near-death experience, though, tends to bring out a lot of different, there's a lot of different theories on it.
Oh, yeah, well, that's another thing. I always thought it was just, you know, because most of my studies have been about out-of-body experiences, and near-death experiences invariably are also mentioned in every single text on out-of-body experiences.
Yeah.
And so my own research has been from, you know, I mean past research, not just what I read over the weekend or over the night, I should say, since we knew about our topic.
Mm-hmm.
The is from OOBE research.
Mm-hmm.
And the near-death experience is always mentioned because they seem to claim that it's similar.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's factions that say, no, it's different. So,
yeah.
Well, whatever.
Well, the near-death experience, like as far as the research goes, it's broken down, and I'm going to start reading directly off the paper now.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to start fumbling this up really bad. Basically, there's two main strands of research within like the near-death experience. You have the psychological approach, which is obviously the psychological approach.
Okay.
which looks for reasons for human beings to behave the way they do and to think and possibly to hallucinate the way they do. Okay. The other side, obviously, then it'd be logical to think, would be the physiological approach, which is searching for that part of the brain which malfunctions and causes the near-death experience. Increasingly, as in all brain research, not just that connected with near-death experiences, the two approaches overlap. So there's gray areas regardless. So
has there ever been a cut-and-dry thing that we talked about?
No, never.
Yeah.
That's what makes this show so much fun to do.
Oh, yeah. And exhausting.
Yeah. But the first theory that stuck out to me from when I was researching this was the dying brain theory, okay? Now, before we even go any farther, I want to state that this did come off of near-death.com, and these excerpts come from John Ritchie's excellent book, Beyond Death. So everything you're hearing here was done by John Ritchie. Excellent work he did trying to put this on paper for people, because like you just said a couple seconds ago, there's tons of gray areas here to try to sift through and understand and then put on paper to explain to people. But the dying brain theory, it's one of the greatest strengths of the argument that near-death experiences are real is also one of its greatest weaknesses also. Imagine that. The fact that all those who have near-death experiences follow the same path toward the light, going through similar stages on the way, makes a powerful case for the whole thing being a profound spiritual journey to an afterlife where everyone from all ages and cultures is welcome. But the same case, the sameness, okay, evidence is also a fundamental part of the argument that the near-death experience is not a real experience, not a spiritual voyage, but a function of a dying brain.
Okay. I've heard this too. Okay. What he's saying is that you everybody obviously knows that your body is simply some kind of big or electrochemical mush of goo and protons and electrons and cells and things like that. And because of the biomechanical the electrochemical things that are happening as your brain is losing power, you know, the chemical reactions are slowing down and going to stop, that kind of thing, and your breathing becomes slower and eventually ceases, and mm-hmm. then so you don't have the oxygen, you're not taking in all of the necessary things to keep your electrochemical systems going, things are going to happen. And what happens is when, just like when you open, if you're in a room and it's all painted red, and if you're not colorblind and you open your eyes, you'll see, you know, red. And when I am in that same room, I'll open my eyes and see red because everything is red.
Uh-huh.
Well, when you die, your electrochemical reactions slow down the same as mine and stop the same as mine.
Well,
so you see the same kinds of things, or you experience the same kinds of things.
Regardless of what color, age, nationality, whatever you want to say, I mean, obviously, we're all different, and that's what makes us special. But let's be honest with each other. We all have the same brain. I know there have been statements and cases where, well, supposedly Albert Einstein had a larger brain.
Mm-hmm.
Supposedly, that's why he could do all this cool stuff.
Okay. Yeah.
But in essence, planet-wide, globally, we all have the same brain. So it makes sense to think, look, I don't care what religion you are. I mean, this is just from a scientific viewpoint. I don't care what religion you are. When you die, we all have the same thing happen to us. Which, with the dying brain theory, that's basically what it's telling you, is that the brain, they all react the same way when we die.
When they're shutting down.
Here's another thing we got to think about, though. What if it's a sudden death? I don't want to get too gory with this, but what if you're decapitated and you're basically, your brain's cut off? I don't know, because I've never been dead. I don't plan on being dead for a long time. But we're talking about what they've been talking. I noticed a lot in this document what it seemed like they were aiming at was a death where you're laying in bed and your body is just slowly shutting down. Systems are shutting down. Organs are shutting down. What about a death that, I mean, you just get your light shut out right in an instant. I mean, and it's been proven that, you know, people can instantly die.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if your body goes through enough trauma in one split second, it can kill you instantly. What happens then? That's a question. That's just a question we have to raise, because what we're doing here is trying to make you guys think.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, what I don't like about this particular theory is, you know, It doesn't help explain that, the instant death kind of thing. But even more to the point, I think, is that often reported is not only the tunnel with the people, you know, seven or eight or whatever people lining it that you can't see their faces, and the bright light at the end of the tunnel, and the like floaty sensation where you don't have to actually move or whatever. It's just happening that you're traveling down the tunnel. That's nice and everything. But before that, evidently, a lot of the cases of NDEs are where the person actually feels like they are not attached to their body, and they can actually see and look around, and they see the accident scene or the operating table or themselves laying in bed in a coma or whatever, and they're conscious of this, and they know this. They are able to process this information as if they are, you know, floating in the corner of a room.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot for a dying brain to get, to suddenly, you know, somehow fix its ability to receive information in the upper, you know, corner of a room perceive visually and audially, you know, through eyes that aren't there and ears that aren't there, what's going on in the room, and actually see themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's giving a shutting down brain a lot of power.
Yeah, it is. Now, there's other theories. There is also the hallucination theory. Some scientists believe that the near-death experience is one day going to be explained by brain functions. We've touched on that, and have suggested that the dying secrete endorphins, hormones which act on the central nervous system to suppress pain, and which are known to create a runner's high. Now, if you don't know what a runner's high is,
you have never seen me run, and you've
never
will.
Well, a runner's high. I actually got this when I was a swimmer. So you get the same thing when you swim.
Mm-hmm.
You push yourself so hard, so to say, you drink yourself sober. Just put it that way.
Wow.
Okay. Uh-huh. You push yourself so hard. I mean, just putting it in those terms, a lot of people can understand that.
There you go.
I know I can understand it. You push yourself so hard that you're in so much pain. You're pushing your body to the point where, I mean, you're pushing yourself past the pain, where your endorphins kick in, your adrenaline kicks in, and you're just like, you're starting to wind a little bit, and then all of a sudden you're like, and you kick into it, and you keep going. You don't grit your teeth and go nuts, but naturally your body does that, though, and it makes you push yourself harder, okay? That happens to like long distance runners. It happened to me when I was swimming. I used to have to swim to 500 free.
Wow.
Which was ridiculous. It's a thinking man's race. You know, you got to really know what you're doing, but you get tired and you'd have to push through it. And even if you lost, you get through it, it's still good. So I know what they're talking about here. But what they're trying to say, though, is next page. Basically, a psychology professor named Ronald Siegel from UCLA, he rejects this particular thing for the spiritual and the mystical importance of the near-death experience. He claims to have reproduced near-death experiences in his laboratory by giving LSD to volunteers. We're talking about the hallucination theory here, okay?
Yeah.
He's trying to simulate near-death with LSD.
Well, the thing is, other than it must be a real trip to have him as a professor, the thing is that... Again, it's all the same thing again. Your body is a big mm-hmm. electrochemical machine,
mm-hmm.
and if you throw in anything, I mean, your body produces endorphins when just before you get this runner's high.
Uh-huh.
He's trying to simulate the
endorphins through LSD.
Lysergic acid diethylamide or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is. Psychotropic drugs, of course, are gonna mess up your brain and the way you interpret, the way you get your information.
Yeah. Well, so they say here that
While I disagree with the theory.
Yeah.
I don't disagree on the same basis as that professor.
No. Well, they say that although the drug-induced hallucinations may have some resemblance to near-death experiences, they are not the same. For one thing, the drug-induced hallucinations often invoke fearful and paranoid experiences, which are not generally found in a near-death experience.
Yeah, I've always read about the near-death experiences that they're welcomed and peaceful and happy or sad, profoundly sad, because sometimes you'll meet departed loved ones, and then when you're either told that you have to go back or you have to make the decision to go back, that's actually sad, because when you're there, you're happy. This is peaceful. This is, you know, nothing like earthly matters no longer matter to you. But if you have to stay, or if the doctors revive you and you're pulled back, then you're saddened by that. But you're also extremely happy and at peace with yourself mm-hmm. when you're in your NDE.
Yeah. So,
hallucinogenic.
I can't speak today. Forget it. You say it.
Yeah. Hallucinogenic or hallucination
theory.
So, oh yeah.
That's basically the gist of that. I agree. I happen to agree that giving someone LSD trying to simulate a near death experience, that's just putting it in a nutshell. Just from my point of view, you are going. I've never tried LSD, but I know I've known plenty of people who have, and let's just say they're going to be working at McDonald's the rest of their life. Their brain, it mushes you out, man. And it's just not healthy, for one thing.
No,
obviously.
and it does mess you up. Bad time. And I don't think that... I don't know why we even talked about that.
Who was that? What, LSD?
That particular theory. Because...
Well, it does tie in.
It ties in, but it basically ate up time from other valuable theories. Because that particular theory, while it's interesting to talk about, I just don't think that one is a stronghold of NDE theory.
Well, what they're trying to say by that, though, naturally your body produces the endorphins.
That's what he's trying to simulate
in the
lab. Oh, right. The
point of it is that when you're dying, your body starts kicking out these endorphins.
Yes, it does. It'll kick out all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. What they do is they are there to suppress the pain.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was saying, the runner's high.
Yeah.
Runner's high, whatever you want to call it. You're in pain, your body kicks out these endorphins. It's a natural painkiller. And that's what they say, that's another theory, that your body does that when you're near death.
Oh, yeah. And it makes sense, and it's wonderful. I mean, obviously,
the
when...
LSD
when
thing.
Yeah. That's the part, probably, that was silly even to talk about.
No, okay.
I dismissed the LSD thing quite out of hand. I have a closed mind.
Just say no, okay?
Yeah, just say no.
So, okay, there's another theory.
Me
called,
with my open mind, I'm throwing that theory right out the window.
There is another theory called the depersonalization theory, okay? The first modern attempt to explain near-death experiences in psychological terms was made in 1930 by a psychologist who argued that people faced with the unpleasant reality of death and illness attempt to replace it with pleasurable fantasies to protect themselves.
Ooh, actually, I love that theory.
They depersonalize, removing themselves from themselves, basically. The floating away from their own bodies that near-death experiencers have. So, okay, now we're on our deathbed, we're ridden with cancer, we're falling apart, we're basically in a state of atrophy. What are we going to do? The only thing that we can really do, because our body don't work anymore probably, is try to take ourselves out of this unhappy place, this painful place, and think of happy thoughts.
It actually makes a lot of sense.
It does.
Because, after all, I mean, another obviously popular psychological thing to do is when you're in trouble or when something is so traumatic to you, you can actually wall it off and forget the memory of it. Similar to that,
I do that with a lot of things now.
Yeah, me too. But building a little fantasy or something to live in while your body is shutting down is a fantastic theory.
And people do that in life. I mean, you do that in life.
Oh,
Matt,
gosh.
There's some days at work where I get myself so frustrated and angry, I have to sit back and literally say to myself, think of a happy place. Think of a happy place. And I mean, you do that in life, and you all know what I'm talking about.
And I always think of Pizza Hut. So, no, and 7-Eleven, those are my two happy places. That's actually a fascinating thing. What doesn't help that particular theory is that do people really think of the same happy place?
No.
With the tunnel and the so many people lining the tunnel and the floating towards the bright light? Why does everybody think of the same happy place?
That just leads to another theory where let's just say that it all revolves around heaven, okay? And I know you've heard this before, and the same thing goes with hell too. Some people say that heaven isn't this big pearly white place with where you ride on clouds and you have wings or whatever your belief is. Some people say it's what you want it to be, what makes you the happiest in life. That's what heaven is. And opposingly, that's what hell is, the same thing, but it's just the direct opposite, where it's the worst thing you could think of, and you have to live with that the rest of your life. That could possibly be,
places.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Because I used to work for the government. That was my version of hell.
I mean, that's just another thing you can look at to think about. It's like, okay, let's sit under the assumption that there is a heaven. What is it? And that possibly, to back up the depersonalization theory, okay, think of a happy place. oh, I want to think about, you know, the day I had my first child. Maybe that was, like, the happiest day. I mean, I don't know.
You don't know that. Yeah. I don't know that either.
Yeah, but I mean, let's just say that, and that may be someone's happy. Now, if they want to live the rest of eternity having a child every day, that's their thing, if that's what makes them happy. But it could be, that could be what their heaven is.
Mm-hmm.
And opposingly, it could be the day my child was killed in a car wreck, let's just say.
Wow, you really brought the conversation to a screeching downward spiral
Well, I'm sorry, I'm just trying to illustrate a point here.
Oh, man.
Okay, next theory. I'm sorry, God. Next theory.
I got to go cry in a corner now. I understand.
And I've done that 2 weeks in a row. I fumbled. I think I pretty much destroyed Santa
Claus. Did you listen to the archives of the last one?
Yeah, I was just...
And now you're mentioning that same thing again from last, and you know, I did bleep that out.
Okay, well, you bleep this out, too.
No, I actually like it. I get what you're talking about.
Okay, so...
It's just these are really graphic.
Yeah, well, I mean, hey, it takes different smokes.
Yeah, okay, that's true.
Okay, I'm burnt.
What's the next one? We only have time for one more.
The memory of birth theory, which is the one I find fascinating. Okay. Another popular theory is that the near-death experience has nothing to do with death at all, but a memory of birth. A baby being born leaves the womb to travel down a tunnel towards a light, and what waits for it in the light is usually a great deal of love and warmth. What happens at the point of death is only a stored memory of what happened when life began. Yet again, there are a lot of points that don't match. A baby being born does not exactly float at a high speed down a tunnel, but it is buffeted along with difficulty by its mother's contractions. And how does this model explain the meeting with friends and relatives who have died, supposedly from other theories? The being of light is supposed to be the midwife or the doctor who rules the delivery room, but many babies were born without a midwife or a doctor present, or perhaps with many people present themselves, you know, with many people present. On a purely practical level, a baby's nervous system is not sufficiently developed to allow it to assimilate and store memories of the birth process. Which, do you remember how, when you were born? Do you remember when you were born yourself, Doug?
Thank gosh, no.
And I don't remember myself either.
What I understand, it's really disgusting. I think that what, although beautiful at the same time. I think, though, that...
That depends on your outlook.
I think, though, that that's actually what I like about that theory. And I don't, you know, subscribe to it as being, you know, a near-death experience. But I do like about that theory is that it does indeed bring things around full circle in that what they're saying, in effect, is that when you are born, you go through a very similar kind of experience, through the tunnel and out into the light, and blah, 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 blah. Uh-huh. And then when you die, you go through the tunnel and into the light and blah, 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 you know. Uh-huh. And, okay, so it's a journey. The journey at the beginning of your life is similar to the journey at the end of your life. Brings things around full circle into
it
actually...
your life closure.
Into an actual beautiful, a beautiful outlook on life and death, because... it actually fits in with patterns nature is full of patterns
and circles
and circles like that, things coming around full circle. And this actually is a wonderful theory to sit and think about because of the way it does.
It's a very warm theory. It's very warm and
nice to think about.
It's nice to think about that if that is actually the way you go, you know, it isn't about just, you know, lights and scary tunnels and people coming at you. I mean, I know I've heard, I mean, I've read and watched on TV about people who are like, yep, I got hit in the head with a pitchfork, and next thing I know, I'm sorry, I got all these gross analogies to
Well, that one was much better than that.
I got hit
in
the head with a pitchfork, and next thing I know, everything was really bright, and here was my great-grandfather, Willie, from Kentucky, saying hi, and here was my grandmother and my parents and everybody hanging out there.
You got to write a book.
Why?
You've got this imagination that doesn't quit. Keep going.
Okay.
That's the last story. Keep going.
So, I mean, this particular theory itself, I mean, it is a very warm theory that, look, you're coming out of the tunnel, you're coming into life. And the thing that really makes a lot of sense to me about that whole theory is that when you are a baby, it is true. You don't have, your nervous system has not been developed completely yet.
Well, and the thing is on the opposite end, as your nervous system is shutting down.
As it's decaying and falling apart and shutting down, like you
yeah.
said. It's reverting back to childhood.
Yeah, it's exactly the opposite. And I think that it's entirely true. I think that there's a lot about that theory that's absolutely beautiful. I don't subscribe to it, though.
I'm not saying I believe it either, but as far as just, I mean, it's a nice, like we said, you really can't.
Out of all the theories,
that's
my favorite
one.
Yeah.
Think about and go, yeah, well, that'd be nice, you know, if I croak and that's what happens, you know.
It's just so poetic.
Yeah, it's
and that's
poetic.
About it. Yeah.
Yeah, but
is it scientific? No.
No. But I mean, like I said, when we started this, there's two ways to approach it: the physiological and the psychological.
This is our hardest topic, and there's
absolutely.
A lot more that can
absolutely.
Be said about it because we didn't even get to the OBE,
no.
NDE kind, the NDE kind that's associated with OBEs.
Yeah,
but.
This just goes back to what we've been saying every week since we the last month, I'd say, is that the topics we're trying to tackle on this show now, it isn't always going to be about orbs and mists and vortexes anymore. It's going to be about thinking and going,
yeah.
look, we're ghost hunters at the very core. That's what we started out doing. We want to hunt
we're
ghosts.
Doing still, take, yeah.
When we started out doing this, we want to take pictures of ghosts and try to prove that there is an afterlife and try to prove that things go on after you pass away and there are things going on in this universe besides of what's going on around you right now. But going into this, we have found that there are a lot of things that, I mean, just thinking, just talking, going, look, we got to discuss this. This
yeah.
is very important. We need to put this out there.
This is
to
part
make
of
think.
It, whether you think about it consciously
it's
or not.
It's all umbrellas. It
it's,
is
it's
all
part of it. Yeah.
Very important. I mean, and we thought, you know, well, a day and a half we had to prepare for this show, we thought it'd be important to talk about the afterlife. And we're going to talk more about the afterlife. It's going to come up again and again because there's gray areas all over the place. This is not a
we
solid
do,
science. This
we could do a season
yeah.
on theories of the afterlife.
Yeah, this
yeah.
isn't a solid science. This is all theories. Everything we've been doing since day one has been theories.
Yeah.
It's all theories. They're fun to talk about. They're fun to discuss. They're fun to talk about on this show. And we like to present them to people. So
send your comments,
yeah.
questions, arguments. To ghostlytalk@yahoo.com.
Yeah, and if you have an idea for a particular topic you think would be really good for the show, please send it to us, and we'll work you into the show somehow if you
yeah,
want.
Yeah, if you have anything to say about it, you can either record it.
Because to be quite honest, man, we're trying to figure out topics every week, and it's starting to get very tough. But at the same time, though...
Well, every topic we come up with, we're like, okay, here's a topic, and then we go, that could take up to 10 shows to do. Because
yeah.
all these topics really
they're very
deserve,
open-ended.
Yeah.
Very open-ended. But the challenge to doing this show now for us is just actually finding the best things to talk about, which we think, I mean, there's a lot of stuff. We can actually find things to talk about.
Yeah.
But we're trying to find things that are going to make you think.
That's what we're trying
and
to
they're
find.
They're going to make us think, and I mean, we're going to think a lot about it because we have to talk about it. And hopefully you're going to sit down after the show or after you listen to the archive or whatever and go, wow, you know what? That is pretty wild. And to be quite honest, when we're talking about this stuff, some of this stuff just comes out on the air. We don't
yeah.
plan. These shows are not being planned.
We don't
we're just
script
sitting down,
them. No.
We're just sitting down going, okay, look, here's the outline. Let's go with it.
Yeah. And so what you have to
that's
do.
Planned
and
that's unplanned.
The same thing you have to do when you're surfing the internet. Because if any of this makes you go out and surf the web, look up near-death experience, look up out-of-body experience, look up, you know,
mm-hmm.
afterlife theories, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
You look it up, read a paragraph or two on a website, and then think about it. Like, sit down and say, does that explain this, that, the other thing?
Yeah. Take
yes
everything
no.
into account. Be open-minded.
And 99% of the time, whatever you just read does not explain things.
No, they don't. And it's just part of the whole big thing where people are trying to figure out what's going on. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, you're going to have opposition. You're going to have debate. That's how you learn.
Yep.
That's how you learn. And on
so,
that note,
learn with us
learn
next
with us.
Sunday at 7 p.m.
So, yeah, take care of yourself. Have a great holiday.
Yeah.
I know I'm going to have one.
And we'll see you next week.
Have a good day, guys.
True science will not deny the existence of things because they cannot be weighed and measured. It will rather lead us to believe that the wonders and subtleties of possible existence surpass all that our mental powers allow us clearly to perceive.
We must ignore no existence whatsoever. We may variously interpret or explain its meaning and origin, but if a phenomenon does exist, it demands some kind of explanation.
A quote from The Principles of Science, William Stanley Jevons, 1835 to 1885.